Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the United Malt Group FY 2022 annual results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mark Palmquist, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to the United Malt's FY 2022 results conference call. We really appreciate your ongoing interest in the company. I'm Mark Palmquist, CEO of United Malt, and I'm joined on the call today by Ryan Betcher, our interim CFO. For today's call, I will start with a safety performance update and then a discussion and an overview of the year. Ryan will discuss the financial performance in more detail, including P&L, CapEx, and balance sheet. I will conclude with an update on the continued progress of our growth strategy and an outlook for FY 2023 and beyond. We're happy to take your questions at the end. Turning to slide four, as always, we commence the presentation with safety. Our safety performance during FY 2022 did not meet our expectations. While we have been able to improve the lost time injury frequency rate, we have seen a disappointing increase in the recordable injury frequency rate, with the total number of recordable injuries increasing by five. That was mostly driven by poor performance in our Canadian plants. We have implemented initiatives to improve our safety performance in FY 2023. Moving on to slide five, this is an overview of the year. As you will recall, we released a trading update on 1 August. Our FY 2022 results are consistent with that update. Our guidance for FY 2023 also remains consistent with that announcement. First, looking at the results for FY 2022, at a group level, underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs and one-off items was 105.9 million dollars, down 23.2%. Our processing division was adversely affected by the dramatic volatility in market conditions. Primarily, that included the impact of the severe drought on the Canadian barley crop, but also the significant disruption to supply chains and increased freight costs. The warehouse and distribution segment performed well, with underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs and one-off items up by 2.5% to 44.6 million. While FY 2022 was a disappointing year, we remain confident for a significant earnings recovery in FY 2023 and beyond. Crop conditions in North America have vastly improved this season, and we have enacted a more proactive approach to risk allocation with changed pricing and commercial terms to better capture the true cost to our customers. FY 2022 represented the peak in our CapEx program, and we expect a substantial reduction in CapEx in FY 2023. We have reconfirmed FY 2023 guidance with underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs expected to be 140 million-160 million. Just a few comments on capital management. Our gearing ratio or net to EBITDA at 30 September 2022 was 5x, and this temporarily exceeded our target range of 2x-2.5x. This was impacted by lower earnings and also the higher value of barley and malt inventories and the additional intake of barley in the U.K. in preparation for production at our expanded Inverness facility. We maintain good relationships with our banks who understand the nature of our business. As we announced in September, we have received covenant amendments from our banks in respect of 30 September 2022 and 31 March 2023, and we have additional inventory funding capacity to accommodate these expanded short-term requirements. We have a clear pathway back to the target gearing range by the end of September 2023. That is being driven by a few items. First, we expect a material improvement in earnings from the second quarter and for the remainder of the year. Second, there will be a significant step down in CapEx commitments in FY 2023, primarily as a result of the completion of the Scottish expansion project. Third, we have entered into a factoring arrangement of approximately 90 million dollars, which gives us further short-term financing flexibility. Finally, we continue to manage our costs and capital initiatives carefully with options regarding timing of certain commitments. That gives us confidence in a return to the target gearing range by the end of FY 2023. As we said in August, on that basis, we believe there is no requirement to raise additional capital. I will now hand it over to Ryan to discuss the financials in more detail.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning, everyone. Slide 7 gives a picture of the P&L for the year. For fiscal year 22, group revenue increased by 13.9%. That mainly reflected the pass-through of the higher barley prices to customers. And as Mark said, our underlying EBITDA, before SaaS costs and one-off items, was $105.9 million, which was down 23.2% on the prior year and in line with our guidance we provided in August. SaaS costs were $13.3 million for the year. We also incurred an asset write-down of $0.8 million following the sale of our Brewer Select business in the UK. I will talk more about this later. There were no significant items in fiscal year 22, so underlying NPAT was the same as our statutory NPAT. Statutory NPAT was $11.6 million compared to $14.5 million for fiscal year 21. Our statutory earnings per share were 3.9 cents. This compares to 4.8 cents in the prior year. And given the performance in the second half, there was no final dividend declared. However, going forward, the company expects to resume paying dividends in line with our dividend policy, which is to distribute approximately 60% of our underlying NPAT. Slide 8 includes our earnings waterfall. So this is the EBITDA bridge, which shows the key movements in earnings for the year. Moving from left to right, the first few bars include adjustments to the prior year EBITDA for one-off items. The starting point is our fiscal year 21 EBITDA of $137.9 million. Removing the foreign exchange effect adds $7.3 million to this total. You can then see the substantial impacts of the Canadian barley crop and increased logistics costs, which together totaled $51.7 million. Next, there was the impact of increased freight and energy costs, which amounted to $7.3 million. However, we saw an improvement in sales mix. This is largely driven by an increased distilling sales during the year, and as supply chains normalized in the second half, we saw an improvement in export sales. Collectively, these changes added approximately $12.9 million to earnings for the year. We also had incremental earnings from our strategic initiatives, including the Scottish distilling expansion and our transformation program. These were partially offset by increased corporate costs. All up, this resulted in EBITDA of $105.9 million for the year. As I mentioned previously, our SaaS costs of $13.3 million and the one-off costs related to the Brewer Select asset write-down were $8.8 million were incurred in the year. Post these items, our EBITDA was $91.8 million. There's further analysis and further information on these key movements in the appendix as well. Now I'll move on to page 9, which covers our processing segment. Sales volume was in line with fiscal year 21, reflecting continued disruption in our supply chains. However, export sales increased in the second half as supply chain conditions improved somewhat. Revenue, however, increased by 15.6%. This mainly reflected the pass-through of significant higher barley prices compared to the prior year. Our underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs for this segment declined by 30.8%, impacted by the significant deterioration in the Canadian barley crop, which reduced yields and increased production costs. We also incurred additional logistics costs to import barley into our processing plants in Canada from Denmark and Australia as we continued to supply our customers. As I mentioned on the previous slide, we were also impacted by disruption to supply chains, including sea, rail, and road freight, which caused continued delays in customer shipments and higher than expected energy costs, which we were not fully able to pass through to our customers. On slide 10, I'll talk about our warehouse and distribution segment. Our revenue was up 8%, benefiting from the business optimization initiatives we have implemented over the past 2 years. So on a constant currency basis, revenue increased by 3.4%. Underlying EBITDA, before SaaS costs and one-off items, increased by 2.5%. The segment operates on a relatively short cycle and is better able to maintain margins in an inflationary environment. The earnings result was slightly below our expectations. We had a delay in some revenue recognition toward the end of the year related to our ERP implementation and also to the hurricane on the east coast of the U.S. However, we are seeing recovery through October and November. Subsequent to the year end in October, we divested our UK craft distribution business, Brewer Select. This decision was part of our continual review of our portfolio of assets and positioning our business and resources to best serve the growing distilling market in the United Kingdom. We will continue to supply our malts to the UK craft market via a third-party distribution partner, which will provide us with the most effective access to smaller craft customers. I've already mentioned the impairment on the sale of $0.8 million. So including this one-off cost and our SaaS cost, EBITDA was 1.2% down on the prior year. On slide 11, our CapEx for the year was $91.2 million. This compares to $103.3 million in fiscal year 21. This was below expectation, largely due to timing to spend on some projects. The bulk of this spend was on growth initiatives, with growth capital expenditure for the year of $64.7 million. Our major growth initiatives included $50.2 million on the expansion of our Scottish facilities to service the distilling market. This expansion will add 79,000 tons of additional capacity at both our Arbroath and Inverness sites and is expected to generate incremental EBITDA of approximately $18 million on a full-year run rate basis. Other growth projects include sustainability and efficiency programs. These include the new specialty ingredient processing plant in Calgary and the off-the-steep water reduction technology installed at our Pocatello plant. As we advised previously, fiscal year 22 represents the peak in our growth CapEx spend as the Scottish build completes. So for the next few years, we expect base CapEx to be in the range of approximately $55 to $60 million, including stay-in-business and safety-related investment in the range of $30 to $35 million. Next, I'll turn to the balance sheet on page 12. Our inventories increased due to additional barley accumulation for the startup of our expanded facility in Scotland, and also from higher global barley prices. Additional working capital was also required due to the impact of the higher barley price. Mark already mentioned the temporary increase in gearing to 5x. That remains within our amended covenants with further headroom available. As Mark also indicated, we maintain a clear path back to our target gearing range by the end of September. Slide 13 gives you the details on our bank facilities. You will note that our term debt is broadly unchanged. What has changed is the increased short-term financing requirement that is primarily related to the higher barley price, but also due to the fact that we have to buy barley in at much higher prices in the lead-up to expansion of the Inverness facility. So we have a timing issue before we make these sales to customers, which temporarily impacts our gearing. As I mentioned on the earlier slide, we have entered into a factoring arrangement for our receivables of approximately $90 million, which will provide us with additional short-term financial flexibility. On a pro forma basis, if we had had this facility in fiscal year 22, our gearing would be approximately 3.9 times. These types of arrangements are standard across our industry and can be utilized as needed for short-term requirements. Otherwise, we have no significant near-term financing requirements in relation to our long-term debt facilities, which do not mature until November of 2024. Additionally, we have completed our customary annual refinancing of inventory and working capital facilities in 2022. On slide 14, I'll move to our operating cash flow. As I just mentioned, we had an increase in working capital due to higher inventory and payables balances reflecting higher barley and malt price. Therefore, our cash conversion was reduced, reflecting this higher short-term working capital draw. That concludes the slides on financials. I'll now hand it back over to Mark to get an overview of our strategy and market outlook.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm going to move to slide 16 and just talk about our strategic priorities. Notwithstanding a challenging period, we remain focused on implementing our strategy for growth. Most of you will recall we held an investor day in August to outline the key components of our strategy, which targets high-value markets where the long-term outlook for growth remains supportive. Our strategy is focused on three areas: optimizing the core, transforming for tomorrow, and creating new value. Over the next few slides, I will detail some of the major initiatives that we are implementing to grow the business and generate sustainable shareholder value creation over the medium term. On the next slide, about our Scottish capacity expansion, we remain focused on servicing the Scottish whiskey market, which requires malt to meet the long-term requirements of distillers to produce aged whiskey. The expansion in Arbroath is complete and delivered an additional 22,000 tons of production capacity and continues to perform to our expectations. Inverness will provide an additional 57,000 tons to service the distilling market. Dry commissioning has commenced, and we expect to be producing commercial quality malt in the first quarter of calendar year 2023. This new capacity is underpinned by agreements with our key distilling customers, with approximately 95% of our UK volume for FY23 committed. We continue to expect incremental EBITDA of approximately $18 million on a full-year run rate basis from this project. Now I'm going to turn to our transformation program. We continue to implement our business transformation program, which is focused on renewing our organization and technology platforms to create a simplified, more efficient, and effective organization. This program is now embedded with our respective business units with clear management, accountability, and ownership of the various work streams. We have combined our U.S. and Canadian operations, which are now working as a single network. That has delivered benefits to the group, including a simplified operating structure, streamlined and empowered decision-making, and improved accountability and performance. We are progressing the implementation of our new transport management system to enhance our data analysis and process improvement. We have implemented the system in the warehouse and distribution business in North America, and we're now implementing the system in the processing business. We've also made the decision to expand the TMS to Australia and the UK. Our new technology platform is a key pillar of our transformation program. Across the group, we are consolidating from 5 separate systems to a single platform. This will create benefits for our business as we streamline processes and have real-time visibility of information on a consistent basis. This will enhance our decision-making and improve our customer experience. We delivered net transformation benefits in FY22 of $4.5 million, which was in line with our previous guidance. We remain committed to delivering approximately $30 million in annualized net benefits by FY24. Moving on to slide 19, we remain committed to operating as a sustainable business. We are working on developing a robust roadmap for the future with the support of external advisors to develop our commitment, plan, and timeframes associated with our tangible emissions reduction plan. We intend on aligning our commitments and reporting with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. We have already invested in developing our Sustainable Agriculture Roadmap, which defines our activities for preserving the sustainability of our barley supply and improving our efficiency by reducing waste, energy, water, and other resources. Our initiatives and progress are outlined in our sustainability report. Let me just talk about the barley crop and supply. Turning to slide 21, barley prices remain at historically elevated levels, albeit we have seen some price coming off more recently. We're still dealing with external factors affecting the global barley market, including supply issues out of the Black Sea area. Additionally, we're seeing some impacts from weather conditions on crops in both Australia and Argentina. In this environment, supply remains tight, and we're seeing customers seeking security of supply. Turning to slide 22, across our key growing regions, we are seeing generally good crop conditions and a significant improvement in North America. In Canada, harvesting has been completed in our key barley origination areas, with estimates of production at 9.7 million tons compared to 6.9 million tons in 21-22. We expect an average crop in terms of volume and quality. In the U.S., production is estimated at 3.8 million tons, which is up 49% from 2021. In Australia, the harvest has just commenced in northern New South Wales and parts of WA. We're seeing good crop conditions in SA and WA. That should help to offset the risk posed by the recent wet weather that we've experienced along the East Coast. Barley production is forecasted to reach 12.3 million tons. Finally, in Scotland, the crop has been harvested under good conditions with lower moisture than typical across the UK and at a good quality for brewing and distilling. In slide 23, I just want to update you on our pricing and commercial discipline approach. We are taking a more proactive approach to manage risk. Our processing contracts are progressively including changed pricing and commercial terms to better capture the true cost to serve our customers. This includes mall pricing with customers with more certainty on crop quality and price and a more disciplined approach to managing customers' volume commitments. Our contracts will also include more frequent price resets on freight and inflation cost escalation more appropriately reflected in the processing fee. The key outcome is that the barley price and crop risk is being substantially reflected in our pricing on our customer orders in 2023. Moving on to 24, let me just talk about some of the things we see going on in the market. Notwithstanding the significant challenges of FY22, it's important to know that the fundamentals of our industry remain positive. Beer consumption has not typically been significantly impacted in periods of recession, while demand for craft beer and ancillary products continues to grow. We are continuing to see premiumization of the beer market with consumers trading up. Malt whiskey production is also expected to continue its upward trend, and demand for distilling continues to grow with our customers laying down spirits for 10-plus years for aged whiskey. Distilling sales volume continues to increase, reflecting ongoing demand and the additional capacity from our expanded facilities. As I mentioned earlier, around 95% of our UK capacity is already committed for FY23. So turning to slide 25, let me make some comments about our outlook for this financial year. We expect the first quarter will continue to be affected by the same factors experienced in FY22. However, we expect earnings from the second quarter through to the remainder of the year will be materially higher. The primary reasons for this include the significantly improved barley crop, the progressive improvement in customer contracts, including pricing and commercial terms to better capture the true cost to serve, increased earnings coming from the expansion of our capacity in Scottish distilling, and continued delivery of the transformation program benefits. As I mentioned at the start of the presentation, we have not changed our guidance for FY23 from the update provided in August, and we continue to expect underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs for FY23 to be $140 to $160 million. For the reasons I outlined earlier, earnings will be weighted towards the second half, and first half earnings are expected to be $58 to $66 million. Finally, let me conclude with key messages from this presentation. We did have a challenging year in FY22. However, we can be confident of a material improvement in FY23, and we are already seeing some positive momentum. We have a much improved barley crop. We have greater certainty of crop quality and volume. We have enhanced our operational discipline with better risk allocation and enhanced customer contracts. So we expect a significant reversal of the earnings impact from the crop and pricing in this past year. We can also look forward to increased earnings for the Scottish distilling expansion and the progressive delivery of transformation benefits. All up, that points to a meaningful increase in earnings in FY23. When added to the material reduction in CapEx commitments, we expect to return to our target gearing range by the end of the year. That concludes the presentation, and we are now happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question today comes from Richard Barwick from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Richard.
And Ryan, can I just get a little bit of, an update on the guidance for FY23 and some of the components? I'm just casting my eye back to some of the breakdown you gave at the August strategy day. So the Scottish expansion, you talked about contributing $10 million and transformation benefits $4.5 million. Are those still the right way to think about it as in terms of the contributors for the FY23 EBITDA?
Yes, those contributors are unchanged, and we're committed and still have confidence that those are going to come to fruition in 2023.
Okay. And so that means if it's another 4.5 transformation, basically you're talking, if you still think you're going to hit the 30 million in FY24, then it's very, very back-end weighted, being so a 21 incremental contribution from the transformation benefits in FY24. Why is it so back-end weighted, and can you sort of give a little bit more of a description as to how we go from 4.5 and 4.5 to a big jump to 21 in FY24?
Yeah, that's correct. It is back-end weighted. We still have confidence that we will deliver that level of benefits. We are on the programs we have identified and are implementing. Those are gaining momentum. So we maintain that commitment.
I just add, Richard, a big component of this is getting the ERP system fully implemented, and that will be completing in the calendar year 2023. Once we have that in place, it allows us to accelerate some of the transformation benefits out of that implementation. The other thing I would add is that we can clearly see line of sight on $4.5 million, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to see if there's anything else that we can accelerate and actually get further gains in FY23 than just the 4.5. So appreciate the question, but that's what we're working towards.
Okay, thank you. And just one more on the FY23. What are your assumptions around currency for both the pound and the US dollar? I'd love to hear some thoughts around just the way we should be thinking about currency sensitivity.
That's a great question. I sure wish I knew where all of the currency exchange rates were going to go. We try to hold in our forecast a pretty constant currency rate. We always typically take a look at the weighted trailing 12 months currency and try to budget off of that. We certainly have seen tremendous strength in the U.S. dollar over the past 6 months. That's impacted most other currencies, and we've seen it come off here a little bit, but I think it's just going to remain volatile for the time being. We certainly try to manage our currency risk, particularly when we, for instance, we produce a lot of product in Canada, and a lot of that is sold against the U.S. dollar, so we certainly hedge that difference. But we don't try to manage the translation when we report in Aussie dollars.
No, but I was just thinking if the U.S. dollar strengthened from here, then that was, that'd be a nice tailwind for you, presumably. I'm just trying to get a sense of, the best way to think about that. Or even if you said, okay, the guidance that we provided is premised on whatever, some rate or a spot from here, that would at least be a little bit instructive.
No, I appreciate the question. The dollar the Aussie dollar, U.S. dollar is trading just over 67 cents this morning. That's fairly close to what we've got incorporated into our budget. So if the Aussie dollar weakened from here, it would certainly be positive for the translation. So just to give you an idea, how we see the impact is that for every penny change in that exchange rate to us is somewhere around a $600,000 to $700,000 impact on earnings.
Okay, that's helpful. All right, thank you, guys. I'll hand over to someone else.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from David Pobucky from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark and Ryan. Thanks for your time today. Just the first one for me. What do you think the key risks are for the business in FY23? Just trying to think about the lower end and upper end of guidance. Where does the delta come from between those two numbers?
Yeah, thanks for the question, David. 23 is just fundamentally different for us in risks than 22. 22 was all about a supply risk issue with the Canadian crop and then also having supply chain disruptions going on. 23 We have so much more certainty on that. The crop is fully harvested in most of our areas, with the exception being Australia. The quality is good. We don't see any need for an import program this year. So a lot better certainty on the supply side. We also have a substantial majority of our business, quite honestly, is already booked for FY23. So we have pretty good certainty that we can see on the revenue side as well. The two issues or risks that we have, one is we still have the first quarter still have some impact from FY22, and we'll have to see how that works through. I would say the second impact is we still have external events and factors. So we're seeing some improvement in the supply chain, which is good to see. We've seen container rates coming down. But again, we could have some external shock that could disrupt supply chains again for us. And then, of course, what everybody's watching, and that is, what's happening in the marketplace with the high inflation and potential of a recession in some areas around the world. Will that affect demand for us? Now, in past recessions, beer consumption actually will marginally improve. It doesn't go down. And then when I look at the product mix, does the craft on-premise consumption go down as a result of maybe trying economic situations? But again, we've gone back and looked at that in previous recessions, and it actually doesn't go down. It tends to improve as what we have experienced is that on-premise is a very low-cost way to socialize and have a night out, having a pint or two of craft beer and some pretty cheap food at the same time. So, and then, finally, I would say on transformation is trying to get that accelerated. If we are not able to accelerate it, then I think there's, some risks that could come into that as well. But those would be the what I call the main issues. So it's really it's not a supply issue. The risks, I think, going forward are really more a demand issue. But so far, we're not seeing any impact on demand or any negative impact on demand, I should say.
Thanks for that color, Mark. That's really helpful. And second one, just in terms of the customer contract renewals, how they're progressing, is there a ready acceptance and ability on the customer's part to share those risks?
Yeah, we've actually had very good success in terms of having the terms changed, as well as actually, I would say, enforcing a little bit more discipline in our group and how we are handling our customers. It's been very good conversations. I think there's a greater understanding of how we as a supplier and they are a buyer, that we're a lot more mutually dependent on each other than maybe was realized in the past. And so the process actually has gone well, David. For FY23, all of our new contracts and annual and spot contracts all have the terms instituted in them. Even on the LTAs, we have the barley prices reset, better reflects the higher costs that we have going on, and our freight costs are reset as well. And then incorporated into the pricing of the contracts, we've got the higher energy costs that we've been experiencing over the past 6 to 9 months. So we feel actually good about where we're at in 2023.
Thanks, Mark. And maybe just one quick one for Ryan. SaaS cost of $7.5 million in 23 is expected. What's the split between the first half and second half, please?
Yeah, so it's largely equally split. We are expanding that to a portion of that to the United Kingdom and Australia. So largely split between the first half.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Apoor Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mark and Ryan. Mark, first one for you, then I've got a couple for Ryan after that. Just with volumes, where are you sitting at the moment versus pre-COVID levels for both just normal beer but also craft beer, please?
The split you're looking for, Apoor, was what?
Just your overall volumes for the business, malt volumes. How does it compare right now versus pre-COVID levels, like 2019? Are we sort of back in line now, or are we still a few percent below?
Yeah, we're getting closer, but we're not quite there yet. We'll be slightly below pre-COVID volumes. But the only thing that I would say is that to take into consideration of the expansion that we've got going on in Scotland. So if I just compare apples to apples, we would still be a little bit below the pre-COVID levels. In terms of the craft, that is really close to getting back to pre-COVID levels. We'll have to see how that develops here over the next 6 months. We're still not quite back on the product mix, so we're still seeing a little bit of, I'll call, cautious behavior by some of our microbrewers. They're still producing kind of less, a smaller array of specialty and custom beers. But we're hopeful that that's going to pick up here over the next year.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then, Ryan, a few for you, please. The tax rate guidance for FY23, 35% to 37%. Just remind us why it's at such a high level, please. And also, is that the right tax rate to think about for this business going forward as well, like into FY24?
Sure. Yeah, so I'll start with the answer to your first question. So the reason that is higher is largely because of our tax credits in Australia and our ability to take advantage of those tax credits with additional profit. And so going forward, we do have strategies in place to manage that tax rate lower. So my expectation would be that we would be able to we'll see a lower rate going forward.
So in FY24, like this business used to be kind of sub 30% tax rate. Is that a fair expectation?
We won't be that low, but it'd be, you know, we'll start to be moving the rate down towards those levels you saw before.
Okay. Okay, and then just wanted the net interest guidance for $23-24 million. It is a fair bit above what the market had in the numbers. Just wondering, is there an additional cost incorporated for the covenant amendments? Like when you achieve those amendments, do you have to like pay a higher sort of dollar cost, and that's reflected in the $24 million?
No, it's you know, the main drivers behind that are increase in base rates, which is, you know, not surprising. We're seeing across all segments. And then also, as we talk about in the release, additional inventory requirements, largely because of increased barley costs, and then the one-time upfront barley cost purchase for our Scottish expansion. Those are the main drivers.
Got it. Okay, and one final question, please. Just from the payout ratio, you said returning back to 60%. Is that a comment specifically for FY23 as well? I'm just curious, given you're trying to get gearing down, obviously, this year. So is that in 23, or is that more of a through-the-cycle sort of comment?
Yeah, that's certainly what the board will have to make a decision on as we get further along in FY23. But they're still fully committed have that as a policy. So that's the goal that they'll work towards. I don't think there's any, I know there's no decision on FY23 at this point, so we'll just have to see where that goes.
Understood. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark and Ryan. Thanks for your time. Can I ask firstly about the warehouse and distribution business? So first half is a pretty good result, 13% sales growth, margin stable year on year. Based on this result today, the second half sales growth slowed to 4%, and you gave some comments on that earlier in your prepared remarks, but the margin declined about 130 basis points year on year. Can you provide a little bit more colour on why there was such a marked deterioration year on year in the second half?
Yeah, thanks for the question, James. It was really just more around some circumstances right towards the end of the second half. One is we're doing our cutover in North America onto the new ERP. So we just experienced some delays, recognition and income right towards the end because we're doing the cutover in September. Second issue is we also had some shipment delays. This would be a big deal for us. Again, it's really a North American issue, but we hit the hurricane season in September. We had a pretty healthy one in Florida. Certainly impacted our Tampa warehouse, but most importantly is it disrupted a lot of the supply chains for a period of time. So it just delayed some shipments, not so much from a rail aspect, but from a truck aspect and getting product to our distribution center. So it's really kind of those events. That's pretty well gone. And so we're not experiencing I'll just call them down drafts going forward in FY23, and certainly we have in October.
Okay, thanks. Second question, just around the balance sheet, so more of a confirmation here. So the leverage ratio calculation is reported EBITDA and net debt, including leases. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. It's in the footnote. If you look at the financial statements in the footnote, the description's in the footnote below as well.
Okay, good one. So then with the goal of returning that leverage ratio to your target range, is that reliant on seeing lower barley prices flow through to working capital, or do you think you can get there purely on the higher earnings, the lower CapEx, and the utilization of that new factoring facility?
That's correct. Yes, it's the second. Those are levers. I'll add one piece to that as well. We have a lot of control over the spending of our timing for any of our stay in business capital expenditures as well, which frees up cash for a net debt calculation.
Okay. So on that basis, then, if you're looking at, I think it's slide 23, where you're just showing those global malting barley prices, the fact that those prices are off their highs now, that's a sort of a tailwind, a benefit to the working capital position. So is it right to think that you're sort of already getting a bit of a free kick, a bit of a head start on your deleveraging, which is not necessarily factored into your pathway to your end goal? I've worded that very poorly, but hopefully you understand what I'm saying.
No, I wouldn't consider it a free kick. A lot of our prices are already locked in, both from a barley aspect as well as a sales price. So it's really a flow through now for us. So we don't have anything penciled in because we'd be looking at a decline in barley prices. So I don't really think it's going to have much of an impact, James. It's just the buildup for us into 31, as Ryan mentioned. You know, one is the inventories are at the highest level for us on both barley and malt. And you're also driving a lot of receivables at that point in time. And that's the runoff that we get basically from beginning of April to the end of September. And then the whole process starts over again.
Okay, and just one final quick one. The factoring facility and the interest expense guidance, is that assuming that the factoring facility is fully drawn and therefore contributing to the interest expense?
Well, so the interest expense between our working capital and the factoring arrangements is similar. So there's really no, you know, the net impact, whether we put that, whether the cash requirements, the cash needs come from factoring versus working capital is largely the same.
Okay. Good. Understood. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from John Campbell from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark. G'day, Ryan. Just a couple of questions, and apologies if some of these I think have sort of been partially or probably maybe even fully answered. But just firstly, around energy costs, and particularly in Scotland, I mean, obviously the UK is going through a world of pain around energy, around gas availability and pricing. Can you give us... And you know, you were obviously very confident around your plant, the new facilities in FY23. But can you give us, share us your confidence around the energy supply situation and I guess also not just the supply but the pricing structure that is based, you know, customer contracts are premised on?
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, John. So you're spot on in terms of the UK. It's, you know, the first issue is around the price. And the vast majority of our business actually has escalators in it so that we're able to pass on those energy costs. It's a little bit of a kind of a delayed timing impact in that we're having to spend the money on the energy up front to produce the product, but then we recover it when we go into the invoices. So we're actually in good shape in terms of that pricing. It's been dramatic for our customers seeing prices go up on malt, just the impact of energy, anywhere from 80 to 110 pounds per ton. That's a dramatic increase. It's almost a doubling on a lot of the malt prices inside of Europe. Your second question, though, is I think it related to how comfortable are we on actually availability or supply of natural gas. And the UK is a little bit unique in where the UK government basically guarantees us that they will have supply. And if there's any change in that price, then again, that gets passed through to the customers. So we're actually in a pretty good place. And UK, relatively speaking, over in Europe is probably in a little bit better place than somewhere like Germany would be, as an example.
So, Ryan, do you see any possibility of plant outages as a result of curtailed supply through, let's say, particularly through the winter period?
Well, that certainly would be a concern. But I don't see it as being very high. One thing is that whole area has actually experienced a very mild winter. Their reserves and inventories are virtually full. Certainly, if you had a very prolonged and intense winter, that's always a possibility. But we're a provider of a food beverage product. I think we would be one of the last industries that would actually be forced into a shutdown situation.
Okay, thanks for that. And just one more, Ryan, while I've got you. Just again, a follow-up from James's question on the banking covenants. So net debt, including capital leases, over EBITDA post-SAS, is that it?
So it actually starts with our NPAT and works its way back up. So from a net debt point of view, you're correct.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. And just two more from me. Sorry. One is customer contracts, which you've already spoken about, sort of moving to a more dynamic pricing. Can you just give us an estimate on broadly, what percentage for FY23 of your, you know, major customer contracts will be effectively under the new pricing regime or new contract structures?
So, John, all the new contracts that we have wrote for calendar 23 has that all incorporated in. On the rollover, I think what you're referring to is some of the long-term agreements that we have that continues into 24. There's very little that continues into 25. On those, the barley prices reset at these higher prices every year, and the freight component resets as well. In addition to a number of these contracts that we have in place that go through 24, we've renegotiated terms with them. So we have a number of customers that have a look at that and realize that because they're the ones ultimately pricing the final product, is that they're best incorporating that cost structure on a go-forward basis. So things such as volatile freight changes in cost We have a number of the larger contracts that they have assumed that responsibility of, I would say, fuel surcharges that are being put on. So on a percentage base, I would just say is that the majority of what we've got for 2023 is sitting under the new terms, all repriced barley, repriced transportation, and it will become a much smaller event for us in 24 and virtually immaterial in 25.
Okay, great, thanks. And just the last question for me, Mark, just around the new CEO appointment, can you just give us an update on how things are progressing?
Yeah, and of course that's a board issue, but you know, very very purposely and intentionally, the board and myself agreed that I would stay through the fiscal year 23, so the board has an opportunity to take its time and find best fit for the next leader of this organization. If that happens quicker, then I'll certainly step down from my position. But we just wanted to make sure that there was ample time, that there wasn't a pressure, a time constraint that was put on the board, just to make sure that they find who they believe is best fit to go forward.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mark. Thanks, Ron.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Topi from Select Equities. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Just a question about the first half, second half split on the cash flow and the debt reduction. Can you just remind us in terms of seasonality and the sort of debt reduction we might expect after in the first half and in terms of reaching that target for the full year for FY23?
Sure. So the first half, a situation, I'll start with EBITDA. So in the first half of our fiscal year, we're going to continue to see, you know, really a first quarter that's going to look more like our fiscal year 22 that we just exited. And that's largely because you know, our contracts are on a calendar year, so we're going to see that in into the first half. From a debt reduction point of view, one of the pieces that's driving our net debt higher in the first half is the additional capital needs for our inventory expansion for our Scottish facility. So that'll roll off as we start to sell that product, start to generate the operating cash flow to pay for that inventory. Those are the main dynamics, and that gets us, if, from a covenant point of view, that'll get us well within our range of 2 to 2.5 by the end of the fiscal year.
Right. So in terms of that expectation, first half, it's really going to be back-ended in terms of the cash flow and the debt reduction. Is that fair to assume?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and that would be very, I would say it's the traditional cycle that we have. We typically run up with the highest borrowings right at the, you know, March, end of March. And then we have the rundown to what Ryan was referring to, is that that typically would run down. And somewhere in September, depending upon when harvest comes on, Mark, either runs a little bit lower than we expect, or we start to pay for inventories and it starts to run its way back up. But that's a very consistent cyclical pattern for United Malt.
Right. And did you actually split out the increased working capital required for the Scottish expansion, or can you give us some sense of that?
Yeah, we don't split that out. It's all part of our working capital facility.
So you can't give us some sense what the requirement there was, or
you know, we'll be on track to opening that facility, you know, really in line with our previous timeline.
Yeah. So right. Mark, so you're looking at buying an additional 57,000 tons of barley for the UK. So if you just look at the pricing aspect of where barley is sitting at today. That's you know, just the usage alone is going to run us up somewhere in that 80 to 100 million additional borrowing needs. But again, that's
that will run off. So just with that additional capacity coming on, it'll probably, I think the best way I can describe it is the amount of capital needs we have will have gone up towards the end of 31 March, and then it will cycle back down again into 30 September. So that's why we feel very comfortable we'll get back into the range by 30 September 2023.
And it's fair to assume that demand is underwritten pretty strongly from the customers. That's
absolutely.
Yeah. And just then, just in terms of the capacity utilization of plants, can you just, as a component of the total cost, obviously with a higher volume you're expecting in terms of barley coming through into malt production, can you maybe highlight the benefit of that capacity, higher capacity utilization that you'd expect in FY23 in the US?
Well, we're going to be running at pretty much the same level of capacity utilization. The only fundamental difference is the increase in the Scottish expansion. So that's really the only major change. You know, we typically are running in the low to mid-90s on utilization of capacity in our other areas.
Right, because I was kind of assuming with a higher crop coming through that that would increase the utilization rate.
No, we still had to meet the needs of our customers last year. So the fundamental difference is instead of having to import barley into Canada, we're able to have the domestic production. So the benefits we have of that is one is that, relatively speaking, that's a cheaper barley for us to buy. There's less logistical and supply chain costs. And then the other component is that the quality is very adequate for us. And so we typically will experience some improvements in yield at the plant. So that's really where we see the improvements coming in. The volume amount really isn't going to change that much inside of North America.
Right, okay. And then just lastly, just on the cost side then, you mentioned the energy cost you've been passing through, but if I recall that you've got rolling contracts in terms of your energy costs in the US, I'm just wondering, are they being renegotiated or rolling off at the moment? And any other major costs? I know you had some issues on insurance, but can you maybe talk to those costs and how they look for 23?
Yeah, so come back and talk on the contracts for a little bit. So any new contract we wrote in 2023 has all the new terms to it. Contracts at the long-term agreement contracts that are still carrying forward in 24. The barley price gets set every year, even though it's a long-term contract. The freight cost gets set every year. And with a number of our large customers, we have also negotiated some changes in the terms to better reflect the increases in costs, namely fuel surcharges being put on in transportation. We've got a number of customers that are absorbing and sharing in that cost with us. So we're definitely looking at an improvement in terms of the overall margins in FY23, partly because of the terms, but partly because of the crop situation is entirely different than what we experienced last year. So it's the combination of the two that's making a fundamental difference for us.
And the energy costs, though, just do they get renegotiated on a rolling basis as well? So just to better understand that.
Well, from a procurement of energy, each region is a little bit different. We're basically locked in for calendar year 2023, and most of our areas, some of them are locked in longer than that, so they've got longer contracts. In regards to as we're selling the malt, that is reflected on all the new contracts that are written in 23. It's reflected on virtually all of our business in the UK because they already have provisions in place or clauses in place in their contract that it passes through. And in some cases, North America, we're able to incorporate that into the repricing of the contract. But yes, there is some components that is not fully passed through.
Great. All right. Thanks for your time there. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. At this time, we're showing no further questions. I'll hand the conference back to Mark for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for taking the time out of their day to listen to what we as United Malt see on a go-forward basis. And I know this may sound like I'm repeating myself a lot, but we really are feeling good about FY23. The certainty that we have versus what we had in FY22 is substantially different. We have the crop. It's in the bin. The quality is very adequate for us to produce. We certainly hope the situation in Australia improves. We feel have a lot of sympathy for a lot of our producers out there right now that are suffering with the flooding situation. And we wish them certainly the best of luck. But Australia as a whole still is going to produce enough barley at the quality that we need that we'll be able to shift probably some of the supplies around to allow us to be able to perform there. So we're really looking forward to getting on with the situation that we have in front of us and really producing much better returns to our shareholders. So again, we appreciate your support and appreciate your attention today. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.